Making that look in. All
Thank you.
right, let's get into it. Welcome back to the Mossible podcast. I am your host, Mo. And today, like every day that we have guests on, I'm just always so excited to explore topics like this because of just how dear and near it is to my heart. And today we're sitting down with someone who doesn't just talk about bridging cultures. She lives it, lives through it, and views legacies from it. She's a Nigerian-American educator, community leader, and change architect. Serving as a campus dean at Wayne County Community College District. She's also the visionary founder of EVA Services, which houses the African City School of Leadership and Innovation and the Nigerian American Executive Women Initiative, both dedicated to uplifting the global African identity. She was born in Nigeria, but moved back to the US when she was 18 months old to Nigerian parents. And she's been raised between continents. She's married to an African American and now raising children. And one of her child, she decided to send back to Nigeria to school. She lives at the intersection of heritage, innovation, and generational wisdom. Today, we're going to unpack all of it. Her, you know, marriage, the bold decision to send her children, her child to school in Nigeria, her life with Nigeria, especially in boarding school, where we met many years ago, and how she's reclaiming space for African culture in academia, family, and civic life. You don't even have to look at her, you know, twice to see how she's so proudly African in, you know, her initiatives, in the way she dresses, in the way she, you know, just expresses herself. So everyone, please join us in welcoming Dr. Elizabeth Ajayi Bridges to the podcast. Hello.
Hello. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Of course. Thank you so much. Now, there's this Yoruba proverb that says that a tree that forgets its roots dries up. And so many second generation Africans navigate the push and pull of multiple worlds. For some, it's the accent that betrays them. For others, like me, it's maybe the lunchbox at school or the inability to explain why you're not allowed to do sleepover.
Exactly.
I'd love to hear your own journey, especially growing up across continents. How did you grow up and what was the experience like being born in the US, moving back to the US, born in Nigeria, moving back to the US, and then going back to school in Nigeria, and, you know, just your formative years in both countries?
I believe how it was awesome just remembering when I was young. So if I can go back and remember, it would be my years like 4 or 5 years old. So I am the first child of six kids, right? And at that time, my parents were in Brooklyn, New York, and by that time, it was just four of us. So if I can remember, like when I say I remember things, I was like maybe 6, 7. Mm-hmm. And I have a younger sister who is like 3 years old, younger than me.
Okay.
And then is 2 years, you know, down. Mm-hmm. My parents, they worked and they were in school. So I remember sitting in Megar Evers, which is a college in New York. My mom will be outside. She's in class and the like. And I also remember many times that I'll just be home with my siblings at the age of 6, 7.
And, good old days.
Right, good old days.
You can't do that now.
Taking care of the younger ones. And they were like, if I was 7, I was 5, 3, 1, and just, you know, making sure that they are good. So I've been like a big sisters for a long time. Living in New York at the time, Brooklyn, I went to PS40, kindergarten and then first, second grade. Then my parents, they were, besides my uncle who was a nurse that brought my dad, they were the only ones here. And so there was no extra help. And like I said earlier, us being in the house by ourselves, them having to go to school, working multiple jobs, they decided, okay, you know what? We need help. We're just going to see if we can send these children back home. Besides that, they did want us to learn our culture. Seeing how we were growing up in America, said, okay, you know what, we want to make sure that they also learn our culture. So I was, we were all sent together, all four of us. I was 8, about to be 9. I actually went to Mayflower Junior School. Ikenne.
Wow.
Yes, we're in boarding school in the third grade.
Whoa.
Grade. I went to me and my sister. So I was in the third grade. She was in the first grade. And we were in a boarding school at Mayflower Ikenne Junior School. And the younger ones were my grandparents in Ileife, Osun State. So after 2 semesters at Mayflower, then me and my sister, Temitayo, we moved to Sacred Heart Private School, Ibadan Ring Road. We were in a boarding school, fourth and sixth grade, because yeah. I skipped the fifth grade.
Of course you did.
So I had 2 years there as well. Then I went to King's International College in GCSE 1, first semester. I was in that school until I was able to gain admittance to Federal Government Girls College GS1. So to be frank, I've started my boarding school journey since
before.
The third grade.
Wow, you were the OG before the IG. What?
Oh, yes. And then you know, I was able, I did GS1 to SS2. If I will bring that to America grades, that would be 7th through 11th grades. And then I came back in the 12th grade. So I did my 12th grade in Brooklyn, New York. So...
Yeah, 12th grade, you meant. 12th grade, right?
12th grade, yes. Yeah, 12th grade in Brooklyn, New York.
Was there a reason why... Because I remember we came back from the holiday and Elizabeth's corner in the very last row of Bong Tinubu House wasn't there anymore, Dom 7.
Yes!
And we thought it was a prank. By the way, I ended up using your space, by the way. We thought it was a prank. Like, where's Elizabeth, you know? Was there anything that happened? Because even Tyler was also gone too, right?
Yeah. Well, Tyler actually had left in GS2. So I think I was in SS1. I think she only spent 2 years at FGCU before she left. So she had left earlier before I'd left. However, my mom just missed me. I was the only child away. Now, by that time, SS1. So for 2 years, I was only one Nigerian. All my siblings had returned. And I went to the United States for a summer vacation. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to the stores, buying my stuff, packing up to go back to Nigeria. My mom said, where you think you're going? I said, I have 1 more year left. And then after that, I'm going to OAU, Ileife University, to read medicine. And she was like, no, you're not.
You're coming back. Not to Brooklyn.
You're coming back here. I miss you. I need you around me. And I cried because I wanted to go back. I wanted to be house.
That was like the peak of everything. You were all lined up, girl. Like,
lined up. I was about to be house captain, you know, leadership. I had to go
You were always into that. Yeah.
I guess, you know, everything happens for a reason. And I ended up staying. And I went to Cobble Hill School of American History in Brooklyn, New York. I did my 12th grade there. Yes, so that's what happened. However, after my first year in college, I said, I'm going back to go surprise my friends. So after my first year in college, I had saved up money. And I came to Nigeria for 6 weeks that summer. And I just went to different universities to visit like a majority of the people that I could, right? Because I didn't have no names.
There was no Facebook numbers. Really like that then, yeah.
Right? I didn't have no phone numbers, nothing. I said, I know my peers, they are smart people, and they will be in these universities. So that's how I went. I just went to, UI, I went to OAU, Unilag, and I just went. And someone will see me, Elizabeth! And they will call all the people. That's how I did it. And then someone will give me a number and say, oh, this person lives here, go there. And
those were the early years of GSM, where it was so expensive having a SIM card and a phone.
Exactly. You know, so funny, because I went to Ilorin, I wanted to go see Yetunde Olatunba. The only thing I had was a name. And when I got there, Someone said, go to the post office. I went to the post office and they were able to trace where she was. And that's how I got to her house.
My mouth is just wide open right now.
It was so interesting. She was like, you came to see me? I said, yes. Oh, yes. It was good. It was good.
Those were days where you, if you had to go find somebody, you were actually going to be actively looking for them. Because exactly. We didn't have Facebook. We didn't have WhatsApp. We didn't have... Are you nothing. Kidding me? To check your emails, you have to go to cyber cafes.
Exactly.
Pay for like an hour and hope that the email is there while you were, you know, browsing for that 1 hour.
Yes. Wow.
I had more questions about boarding house, but I want to do this in a very chronological manner. So permit me. I'll come back to the questions about boarding house.
Yes.
So now, as you were talking about just growing up, and I mean, your parents, by the way, kudos to them. Being just fresh immigrants here and having to, like, you know, parents... and going through school, and you painted that picture so vividly, because I feel like for most immigrants, you know, who are starting here for the first time and planting those new roots, it can be quite lonely, right? Yeah. And the environment, don't get me wrong, the US has a lot of things going on for it that is good, mm-hmm. but man, for immigrants, it can be quite harsh, because yes. the social structures that we have back home in Nigeria, for example, like where you can have family members watching your kids, or, you know, extended stays at schools, mm-hmm. or aunties, or, you know, neighbors helping out. You don't have that here. If you don't have money, if you don't have the exactly. connections already. And if you're new, trying to navigate schooling and then having kids, it's a lot. So kudos to all the immigrants, especially your parents.
Yes.
Who did
yes.
it and did it well, because it's not easy. I want to just call that out. Yes. Now, many children of immigrants, they experience what's called code switching, you know, fatigue, which is like that constant toggling between identities. And but my question for you is, when did you first realize you were Nigerian? An American, and what has that dual identity meant to you over time?
I'll say that I realized I was Nigerian and American when I actually came back in the 12th grade. So the 12th grade was when I addressed myself as Nigerian. Like, who are you? Oh, I'm Nigerian. I don't use the term that they use right now where they say, oh, my parents are Nigerian. No, I'm Nigerian. And that was it. Like, I'm Nigerian. And I never even put the American...
As a hyphenated.
And yeah. I'm just myself. The interesting thing about it is because I grew up here, right? I came here when I was 18 months.
Yeah.
So because I grew up here, I already had an American accent. Right? So when I get to, when I got to Nigeria, I guess it's in the water. I got a Nigerian accent. So coming back is like, oh, wow.
You changed.
I love your accent. I love your accent. You know, that's has always been it. And even though there's this code switching, I've never done that. Unless it's unconscious. Mm. I just talk. And so when I just talk, you either hear it that I'm Nigerian, or you hear it in American. So for example, when I went back after when I came in the 12th grade, that was 1 year, and then I spent 1 year in college. So that's 2 years being here. And then going back to Nigeria for that visit, I just talk. And, oh, you're not from here. You're not from here. We can hear it. The way you're talking, we can hear that you're not Nigerian, yeah. you're an American. And it's funny that even now as an adult, when I'm with some Nigerians that don't know me, they think I'm an American. They don't even know that I'm Nigerian.
I'm American. And your first name also, you know, it's
Elizabeth.
English, yeah.
Last name, Bridges.
Bridges.
I made sure that I kept my last name.
It works for you, man. That's so cute.
Yeah, so I'll say when I came 12th grade, that's when I realized, okay, Nigerian, American, oh, there's a difference.
Yeah.
I could see it,
yeah.
yes.
Yeah. How about now? Like, why? Because, again, you've had so many layers of interaction between those two continents. And just taking a cursory look, it might be easier to just be like, you know, I'm done with Nigeria, because it's been quite a while since you've, you know, lived there for so long. What is it about Nigeria or even Africa as a whole that still keeps you so grounded? Because I see it in everything you do. I mean, I follow you on Facebook you're doing so much, you know, your beauty pageant, your leadership program, your leadership within a high school committee and all that. You're so, you know, grounded in that. What is it about the country as a whole that is, you know, you're so passionate about?
I believe Nigerians in particular,
yeah,
they're special people. They're special people. In us to achieve, want to be successful. And the main thing I think is we set goals and we try to achieve them. I feel like the things that I do is of my purpose. If I really think about it, I remember when I was in the first grade here in the States, there was this art competition in the public schools, and we had to draw a self-portrait. And I drew my self-portrait, and I had a hat, and on the hat it said Dr. Liz on it. 6 years old.
Wow.
Already putting Dr. Liz. Now, even though there's the stereotype.
Oh yeah, doctor, engineer.
Doctor, engineer, lawyer.
Or nothing.
So that might have been whispered in my ear. However.
That's like a starter pack for Nigerian.
Exactly. Starter pack. Yeah, I like that. It might have been whispered in my ear. However, I took it in, right? I took it in for that to be that. And do you know that I won that competition in the whole state of New York? I still have my little plaque from it. So the pathway to medicine, because at the time, that was the only doctor that was. And it just took me through, you know. It's funny because sometimes you have a career, however, you have a purpose. And I think the things I did on my day to day was truly the purpose. Like, if we go back to Sacred Hearts, I was class captain. And then I was actually in primary six, I was actually the head girl in primary six. So it seems that people have started seeing
the leadership potential,
in me at that age. And then I got to GS1, and I think I was class captain so many times.
I believe you, don't worry. It's been
throughout those years. Yeah, and then I was in different groups as well.
Yeah.
So I was in the drama group, we're in Red Cross. And even then, going to college, when I got to my university, we hung out. Africans hung out.
Yeah.
However, there was no official group. And at the time, I created Wayne African Student Society.
Wow.
Which still runs till now, almost 23 years later, they're still going strong. But it was just in me to, okay, let's create, let's come together, let's educate what Africa truly is. Surely I'm Nigerian, but Africa is united.
Yeah.
And you still want to show what Africa has to produce. So I think that's creative innovation, I guess, to educate, to showcase what our excellence is has always been in me. So in everything I do, I guess, me will shine, obviously.
Yes,
in it. I can't. Yeah. You can't just subdue it unless you just don't want to do nothing, right? Unless you just don't want to do nothing.
Yeah.
But I believe that if you can, go ahead. Why not?
Thanks for sharing that. Thanks for sharing that. So, I guess now for my question for you, many of us in diaspora still struggle with that question of where is home. I go to Nigeria every year.
Oh, nice.
And the last time I was there was January of this year, and I was there for 3 months.
Nice.
It was the longest I had stayed back since I relocated. And don't get me wrong, December is like almost like a totally different country. But when everybody packs up and goes home, and January is like, okay, this is the real Nigeria now.
Exactly.
Everywhere is like back to status quo. But I still always struggle with am I ever going to be able to move back to Nigeria? I don't think so. But there's always that constant struggle of where does home really feel like? I certainly don't feel always at home in the US for so many reasons, even though I've been here for more than a decade. But I imagine that this is not unusual for most immigrants. It's often a moving target. right, between those passports and memories. Mm-hmm. So for you, where does home live for you?
I feel like home is where you make it.
Mm.
So, and at first I was thinking of that, and I believe I was first saying to myself that home is where you stay for long periods of time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in your physical house, you know, you come home every day. We even use the word home in that sentence.
Yes.
You come home every day, you make yourself comfortable, you create an atmosphere where you live and thrive. At work, I work, I'm there 8 hours a day. So I make my office as most comfortable as I can. And for the most part, I would say home is where you can leave an impact, right? In my workplace, I try and leave impacts. I try to be as comfortable as possible because this is where I am. People see me here. It's like when you're in your community, people see you in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
You say hello. And when you leave, they still remember, the African lady that lives down the street, you know.
Yeah.
And you leave an impact on them. They remember you. The same way it could be if I go to Nigeria today with my extended family, I leave an impact. That is the daughter of so.
Yeah.
We know of her. She's here. But for the most part, for me, as of right now, home is right here in Detroit, Michigan.
Mm.
This is where I am for the most part. I have been now over 20 years. This is where my church home is. My work, my family, my community, and so I live and thrive right here in Detroit. And when I go home, Nigeria will always be home. So yeah. I can't question that.
Yeah.
When I enter into Nigeria
airport
border, they say welcome home.
yeah.
They say welcome home. Yeah. They look at my passport. They say welcome home.
Yeah.
So. Nigeria will always be home, but as of right now, Detroit, Michigan is
home. Okay.
And I think we as Nigerian Americans, we need to dwell in that. I'll be quick with this. My parents, when they were working and slaving, going to school, they were saving money and they were building houses in Nigeria.
Mm-hmm.
For them moving back, like you said earlier, they tried. They tried, but it didn't work, and they came they came back. So as a second generation, would I do the same and go and build homes that I never slept in, those homes my parents built? No.
Maybe not. Yeah. Okay.
Detroit it is.
Thanks for sharing that. That's beautifully captured. Now, you're married to an African-American man, and those are rich but layered, right? There's a shared blackness, yes, but often the different cultural codes. How have you been able to find a reading in this dance of differences? And shout out to him, by the way. I know he's also, because I see him dressed up in, you know, Nigerian attires, which when you guys have parties. Mm-hmm. And so kudos to you for that. But how's that been like for you, especially what you've learned about blending cultures, shared values, and communication?
It's so funny. If I introduce my husband to anyone, in the first meeting, they just say, oh, hello, and that's it. And if I see them again, or if they're talking to somebody else, they say, oh, that's Elizabeth's husband. Oh, he's from Nigeria. they automatically think he's Nigerian because of his mannerisms and how he behaves. And it's funny, he's been to Nigeria 3 times.
Yeah.
And he just entrenched in it. And wow. That's one thing that I love about him, because he did accept who I was as a Nigerian, as an African. And is interested to know that before he met me, he has had interactions and had friendships with Nigerians. So meeting me wasn't a big surprise. I guess I was initially worried about some of the little things.
Like what?
Like, for example, my grandmother, she goes to a white garment church.
Oh, yeah.
Those are things that they don't do here.
Understand, yeah.
Like, how would he blend in there. My family, we're a little bit louder than others.
Which Nigerian family is loud?
Hopefully he won't think we're fighting. We just talk and having a good time. But is interesting how he's assimilated, and I just had the benefit of growing up here. So me growing up here, someone will say, oh, you're an African-American yourself, you know. I only spent 7 years in Nigeria, so it was a good blend. I don't know if I answered your question.
Oh, yeah, I think you did, in the sense of he already knew some Nigerians before you. Just seeing you was almost like you didn't have to explain a lot. He understood everything, and he's been able to accept so many parts of it, which is great. Now, on the other hand, how has that translated to, like, your kids? Like, how are you guys parenting across those cultures? And by the way, congrats on your wedding anniversary. I know you had one recently.
Yes.
What's your parenting style? Because brush strokes here, right? Generalization. Immigrant parents often bring collective parenting styles. Mm-hmm. But American-born partners are more individualistic. Now, how did you guys navigate those cultural tightrope? Admittedly, he's been exposed to Nigerians before he met you. Yes. But I imagine parenting also brings a new light to just, you know, what those shared values might look like.
Parenting style, for the most part, we are united in raising the kids. Obviously, discipline. And it's funny because I guess parenting a child, there's no handbook, right?
No.
To it. And one will pull from their own experience, right? From their parents. And fortunately for me, even though I grew up with my parents, I did not technically grow up with my parents because I was in a boarding school.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm taking parenting from what I remember, which is boarding school. Do what you need to do. Get up.
Be self-reliant, right? Yeah, lay your bed.
Be self-reliant.
Yeah.
And I would say, for the most part, our parenting style will fall under Christianity. So I guess my religion could overshadow the cultural aspect.
Cultural part of it, yeah.
And the religion, which is my religion, which is Christianity, me and my husband are one on that. So believe in God, family next, and then your pursuits. So as far as God is first, and we do what we need to do, which is honor God, honor our family, be truthful, love one another. So, and then be, you know, I guess my Nigerianism will be that you need to be the best you can be. And that's where I guess me and my husband will not be on the same accord, because he's like, they can live their life. don't push them. But I'm like, oh no, I'm pushing you all the way.
Yes.
But for the most part, he's more the disciplinarian than I am.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. Like I'm more bark. Oh, go on, do this. Why are you there? Get up. And he's more like, he'll be watching, and then.
Yeah.
And then on the flip side, he's also a helper. So where I say, you go and do this, and then I walk away, then I see my husband going to go do it. I say, no, they have to do it. You can't help them all the time. I need them to be able to do it themselves. So it's a good mix. We talk and we understand them, you know.
Yeah.
The kids, they get it.
Yeah, like, yeah.
They get it. Yes.
I mean, and they'll be better off for it, because what it shows to me is a united front and presence, you know, of both the male, masculine and the feminine, and, you know, both of you just working hand in hand to make sure that they are productive members of society. Because that's the goal of most parents, especially African parents. Like, how do we get our kids to be independent and contribute positively to society? Now let's go back to your boarding house experience, right? You've talked about just the reason behind, you know, your parents sending you guys back to Nigeria was to help them out. Now, what are your, I guess, vivid memories, perhaps maybe the funny ones or the frustrating ones from those 4 years?
I could start from when I first got to boarding school, right? Third grade. Before I got to boarding
school.
That's
so early though. Third grade, like my goodness. That's like my daughter, like in 2 years, I'm like, no, I'm not ready.
While I was in America, I was a talkative. Like, I talk so much.
They probably have diagnosed with the ADHD, Lord, you know, at this time and age.
I talk like I dreaded parent teacher conference because they'll say Elizabeth got but she talks too much.
That was me.
It will be to the point that I'll be talking at home and it's not even talking like it's like asking questions and I was so like, but I talked constantly. And I remember this one. My father was like, go to the corner. You're going to stay in the corner for 10 minutes. And I'm just there. And then I'm looking at the time and I'm like, okay, it's 10 minutes. Can I talk now? Can I talk now?
This is me.
And it's so funny because I found a certificate that said curiosity killed the cat. Like, you know, the certificate that they give you at the end of the school year. And
it's
like, I'm that kind of person that walked up to a teacher and be like, Miss Brown, why are you wearing those pantyhose today?
No.
So that's how I was like,
you
I
were before, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I remember on the school ground, like two of my friends would be fighting and they'll say, tell her that this. And I'll say, she said, and we're right in front of each other. So I remember being very talkative. But when I went to Nigeria and I was in boarding school, and this is now, we're now in 1993, right? This is 1993 in the 90s, where I was then introduced to Pankere, the whip.
Yeah.
So afternoon night prep, they had these class captains and they would write names of noisemakers. For the first couple of weeks, my name was on that list too.
Because why not?
So on the list. Like, even if you do... they're writing... Oh, she's about to talk. I need at least one name on this list.
Just say, put my name on that list first. But even take a preemptive strike. Put my name on it because I'm going to talk.
And it's interesting because, you know, obviously they spanked you and or you had to pay some money because you talked. And
money.
Say it again.
You paid money?
At the time, you know, you're talking. So they're trying to
bribe you.
To create a atmosphere, right, of order. And I think that was one thing that brought my talking down, obviously. Yeah. So when
you couldn't afford
that
anymore.
Came back in 12th grade. My dad, I think I came back to visit in GSS 2 because that kind of, you know, I was talking up until maybe 12 and my dad was like, oh my god, you don't talk no more. I said, oh, now you want me to talk. So that was one.
You out in Nigeria.
right. I would say I met Christ and everybody saw your GSS 2. So that was a big point.
She's your pastor,
life.
I know, and the chapel.
Exactly, yeah, the chapel. Yeah, I think I got baptized there as well. Yeah. And just being in that atmosphere of other sisters, and I guess it's monkey see, monkey do, which becomes habits. Yeah. So everybody's doing this, and you're doing it, and in the meantime, you're learning. Right, because you're repetitive, waking up, you're praying, we're doing Sunday school, Bible school, acting. I was in a drama club in the church part of it, and so those were memories that I will never forget, which has even come into my life now, right? Because you only do what you know, what you know. So I share that, like, right now. I'm the church administrator and youth leader. Nice. So we do the same things that I did back in Oyo. Okay, we're doing this, we're doing singing these songs. Introduce. So my time in the boarding school was very, talk about independence. Oh my God. Independence, trust. Even going back to the question about how was it marrying your husband?
Yeah.
Boarding school already taught me how to marry my husband because right? When you live as a day student or you live at home, the only thing you know is
the
your
swimming.
Home.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But in the boarding school, I met different people from different cultures. They were not Yoruba, they were Igbo, they were Indian. They were from all. I was really used to communicating. Even the people I was telling someone the other day, say, Elizabeth, I don't remember you with any particular clique. Because I'm not clicking.
Yeah.
I was friends with
everyone. Yeah. You would strike up a conversation. I remember about you. Yeah.
I would talk to everybody. Yeah, even now, like I go back, this person. I say, I don't talk to them now because even then, when I see them, I talk to them then. If I talk to them now, we'll start all over again.
Yeah.
And so boarding school, I also learned the one lesson I learned in boarding school was that it's just me. And when I said, give an example of it's just me. I remember one visiting day, people come, families come, and my people, they didn't show up. My uncles, my aunts, I think I was in GS2, and they didn't show up. They didn't show up that visiting day, and after that day, I think they didn't show up two business days back to back.
Wow. You probably was having broke.
I was broke.
No
provisions, nothing. And these people, that obviously I know got some funds for my parents to take care of me. However, it did teach me that you never be without. So obviously the next semester I was going to school with two boxes and they said, are you going to your husband's house?
Yes,
I'm going to my husband's house.
I will not be caught twice.
Look, you cannot trick me twice. And ever since then, I always made sure I never wanted to lack, right? I work hard to not have to... I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing to not have to depend on someone else.
On some things, I know what you mean. Because that's what boarding house was like for most of us, how to project things that might happen beyond your control.
Yes.
It's not like you don't depend on other people, but you don't put the expectation of your sustenance on everybody solely.
That's exactly the right word. You got everything. And that has carried on. And I guess that pushes me as well. How do I use the gifts that I have?
Because
God will say, someone will say that you already have all the gifts. Everything that you need is already inside of you. So how do I express that? How do I use that? And I think the boarding school really, it opened my eyes to how to behave, I learned a lot. A lot of my memories or day to day in the morning. Do you know that I still wake up at 5 a.m. in the morning?
No way, Elizabeth.
My body.
It's been 20-something years.
My body wakes up before my alarm.
Jeez Louise.
Because of how, the boarding school time structure.
My husband hears this because I struggle with mornings. I'm not a morning person. I don't rise and shine at the same time. I'm still struggling. But I always lay my bed, though.
Do you know I go to bed at 9 o'clock?
It's bad.
9 o'clock and I'm up by 5. Even if I don't go to bed at 9 o'clock, I still wake up at 5.
Elizabeth, it's been 20-something years. You can let go now.
That's how ingrained that boarding school experience settled in, yes.
Wow.
I enjoyed it. I didn't have no shit. Issues with boarding school. It was nice for me.
As we were just talking about boarding school and that visiting day, man, a bit of a trauma just came up in me. Surely when you're just waiting for your parents, you never know whether they were going to show up or not, right? I know we had like... visiting days, like the first visiting day, usually they won't show up because it was just right after you resumed.
Yes.
But the second one was very critical because that's when most of your provisions were done for. There was no email to say, by the way, I might not show up this week, or let's Venmo you money. No.
Yes, yes.
I mean, they send you letters. It probably hope that the postmaster will get it to you.
Exactly.
In time, you know.
Exactly. Exactly.
Oh my goodness! But it's
one more thing.
Oh yeah, go ahead, please.
GS1. So like, even though I had been in boarding school, that my accent was still there. And so I remember they were passing me around. Oh, just talk. I want to hear you talk. The seniors. And I think I got my, what's her name? My bunkmate at the time, Shukurat Ikolaba.
Oh, yeah. One of the Ikolaba girls from Ibadan.
Yes. And she named me Eliskoko. Eliskoko.
Eliskoko, yes.
that Eliskoko, my email address.
Your email, yeah, I remember, yeah.
Even to today. Some people see me, it's Eliskoko, Eliskoko.
Yeah.
That was an awesome
memory. Yeah, yeah. And kudos to what you do with the Alumni Association and ISO Bridging Apps. And, you know, it's so amazing to see that. So now let's get into the crux of today's conversation, because I feel like I can keep talking to you on and on. Now, you sent your first child back to Nigeria, and I have so many questions about that. By the way, shout out to Kelechi. We're just talking about schooling, and she mentioned, I'm like, I'm gonna reach out to Elizabeth to ask that, because I imagine that there's so many. And I met with Turayo, and she was like, oh yeah, that she's actually thinking about it. I'm like, wait, is this something that is a trend? I want to know. I want to see how we can equip one another and, you know, provide support. Now, what made you send your eldest child to Nigeria for high school? And I have so many questions about just, there's this perception that education, like the school we went to, you know, right now the quality isn't as great as before. And, you know, with insecurities. And now that kids are internet savvy, are you not worried that she might feel like she's being abandoned if she, you know, chats with her friends that are, you know, in the US? Like, what was your deciding factor for sending her back? And even the practical steps she took in ensuring that the school that she was going to be put in would meet all the needs, you know, you and your husband want to, you know, instill in your child.
Okay. So, first of all, so we went to, I think she was in the seventh, she was in the seventh grade, which is GSS1.
Mm-hmm.
She was seventh grade here, GSS1. And we went to parent-teacher conference. And your daughter's doing awesome. She has A's. And, you know how they give
yeah,
you
yeah,
the
fluffy, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then the teacher said, this was the first parent-teacher conference. I think it was like in October. And she said, oh, but she's becoming social. I said, what does that mean?
She's what?
She's becoming social.
What does that mean? Is that like a detriment?
So I said, what does that mean? She was like, oh, she's becoming chatty. I said, chatty. I said, okay. You know, she's becoming popular. I said, oh, okay.
Is that good?
Exactly. Someone said, and I explained that to someone, and just like the same reaction you had.
Yeah.
The same. Because if it was good, you could say, she has leadership qualities.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The voice of the school.
The way you do, but that contraction, but.
So I was like, I felt, the way I interpreted it was, she was becoming distracted. That's how I felt.
Did it provide context? More examples?
That's a chatty. She said she was chatty. So I'm guessing I felt it as a negative, that probably when the teacher's talking, she's probably talking with her friends instead of focusing. And then that's when I made the decision that, okay, she has too many distractions. Now, the year before, I think was COVID. No, I think a year or two before was COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was sixth grade. They had given them laptops. And my children don't have phones.
They don't have devices.
They had tablets.
Mm.
But the school had given them laptops, Google Classroom, and all that. We had traveled to, I think we went to Chicago. And the whole time, my daughter was on a Zoom meeting with all of her classmates. Like, it was 24-hour Zoom. They would just log in and someone will be there. They just come in and out of the Zoom.
Zoom
room was open. And obviously we're on vacation. So I'm like, okay, we're on vacation. Enjoy yourself. So she's She's at a time where she's meeting friends. They're just talking about all things. They're chatting in the comments. And I said, okay, I guess she's gotten to that age where she's her peers, and her peers can influence. So I said, okay, I need her to be among peers that have same goals and values. Not that Americans don't have it.
Say no more. We understand. Don't worry. You don't have to explain. The more we explain, the more we're digging the hole, but we understand.
Yes. Yeah. So I told her, I said, you're going to go study in Nigeria. Oh, really? I said, don't worry. It's going to be an awesome experience. Your mom went, nothing happened to me. All is well. She started warming up to the idea. Mm. And then she started doing research herself, you know, looking.
Oh, of course, Elizabeth's daughter.
Nigeria and all stuff. So my mom.
Has she been to Nigeria before then?
She had never been to Nigeria. Okay. None of my kids had ever been. Okay. She's the only one who has been to Nigeria now, well.
All right. But go ahead. Your mom said. Yeah.
So my mom, the year before, had mentioned that she's trying to move to Nigeria. She had gone for 6 months where she was staying. The neighbor was a teacher at a particular school, Trinity International College, which is right on the Lagos-Ibadan Expressway. Mm-hmm. Muwe, I think,
very close to Redeem Camp, yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And she said, this would be a good school. She introduced me to the enrollment person. They sent me, they said that she's going to take an exam, an entrance exam, because right now at this time she was gonna be entering just as two,
yes, yeah, eighth grade. Yeah,
yes. And so she had to take an exam, and then she will have to do an interview. So they sent me the papers in November. I brought the paper. I said, okay, they're gonna send me like 3 or 4 past exams. I looked at it and I gave it to her. I said, you gotta do this. That first test that she took, she got like 10 right out of 50 questions.
What?
I'm like, what? And what it told me was that even though people think that the Nigerian educational system has gone down, it has not. I feel it's because 1 + 1 = 1.
Yeah.
You understand? Sorry, 1 + 1 = 2.
Only in marriage, okay? Only marriage. Education, 1 + 1 = 2.
One plus one is two. Yeah. So my point is that whatever they were doing back then, they're still doing it
now, yeah.
The technology is what has changed. Mm-hmm. And even back then, so for example, back then when we're in computer class, we were never in a computer lab.
No.
We were drawing the mouse.
Computer and the keyboard and the keys on the keyboard.
We didn't go to a lab and see the prototype of a heart. We were actually drawing the heart, labeling it. I remember geography. We were actually drawing Nigeria and all the states.
States in it, yeah.
We were doing theory stuff. And so now it's like, okay, they're adding technology and people are going away from using their brains. So I think her doing those tests, it was showing in her classes here. It was more advanced, even the booklet. So I bought the Ugo Si Ugo National Common Entrance book,
the math and the English one, yeah.
Not English, for her to start like practicing it. And in the beginning of the book, it says, this book are for 4th, 5th, and 6th grade.
4th, 5th, and 6th.
To start practicing. Mm. So that means that people in the 4th grade should know this information to take this exam. By this time, she was in the 7th, though. So I said, oh, no. Another thing, and I'll go back to me. When I came back in the 12th grade, I'm looking at this stuff. I'm like, Every time I got an exam back, 99 out of 100, 99 out of 100, 100 out of 100, all the students were like, why are you here? You need to go back to Africa. Because I believe that we are so advanced.
Yeah.
Now, compared to our education here, and I tell people all the time, Americans in middle school, high school, whatever, they believe that once you leave, when you leave here, you're going to university with other Americans. That's not the truth. You're going to a university with international students.
Yes, yes.
So they're bringing their international...
The best, by the way.
The best of the best. They bring their international experience to these schools. And guess what happens? The teachers, the curve is on the international students.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not on the Americans.
Yeah.
So then you see all these students drop out first year because they can't keep up. In Nigeria, we keep students back. You see, auntie in GSS2, who's 18 years old in GSS2.
Yeah, yeah. No, every child can be left behind. We don't just pass them because we want to.
Exactly. But here, no child left behind. Everybody moves forward.
Except in college, yeah.
Until you get to college, yeah. And then you have 4.0, and then you get to college. Oh, wow. Compared to them, I was a one. So that seeped into my head. I said, okay, no, I need her on an international, I need her thinking like an international, on an international basis coming back. She went to Nigeria and we got to the school on the first day and there was another kid there from London and the boy was going crazy. The enrollment teacher said, excuse me, ma, can you and your daughter please talk to this boy and his mother? And we, you know, calming the boy down. Why am I here? I'm supposed to be in London. La, la, la. And I asked the mother, I said, did you let him know he was coming?
Yeah.
And she said, no. She didn't tell him he was coming. I said, oh, for the most part, people think, oh, I'm sending you back to Nigeria. They use it as a punishment term. Mm. Nigeria is not a bad place. You don't use that as a punishment. Mm-hmm. I was correcting somebody. I say, don't tell your kids, I'll send you to Nigeria. So all their life, they've been hearing, I'll send you to Nigeria, send you to Nigeria, send you to Nigeria. And then now it's time to go do some great things in Nigeria. And their mind goes back to that statement of when they were bad, you use Nigeria as a threatening...
Penitentiary place, yeah. Mm.
As a bad place. So he thinks he's coming to prison. I said, oh, no. I've told Jessadun almost a year. She had known this almost a year in advance. She was able to talk to all her friends. We even did a send-off party for her. She was able to exchange numbers. She was prepared to go. And I will advise that for anyone who's thinking of it. Don't let it be a last-minute thing of, oh, you're going to Nigeria. It should be, give them time to kind of...
I mean, in your case, I think it works out beautifully well, and I love just you adding to that perspective. Now, I've chatted with parents where there's a particular family that I know about in Canada, and their son was just getting into drugs. Like, this was someone in the 7th or 6th grade. They couldn't even tell him because he was always running away from home, so they had to trick him that he was going on vacation because that was the only option they could do. So, right, I imagine for you, your experience is so different. But for parents who might not have that luxury, there could still be another way of maybe having that conversation if you're able to. But like, I imagine the parents in Canada, they probably were just, you know, like, this is the last resort. Otherwise, this boy is going to end up in prison. And we might not be able to pay him whatever it is that is going on with him. But I love your approach of preparing the child and not seeing Nigeria as, okay, well, this is the bad place I'm talking to you about, but they're going to change the rhetoric all of a sudden. It's a good place for you to go and study. So it's been like 3 years since she's been there?
Actually, she just went last year.
Oh, wow. So how's it been?
So far, so good. I remember, so September, we got this in September. And in November, I was talking to her and she was like, Mom, can I stay? And I'm like, I said, that wasn't the plan. The plan was for you to be here for 2 years and for you to come back. Because why I wanted... So if she was there, she was going to do 8th grade and 9th grade, right? Yeah. And then she would come back and do 10th, 11th, 12th. High
school, yeah, yeah.
And why I wanted her to do that, I wanted her to do the dual enrollment. Mm-hmm. Like, so dual enrollment is basically being in high school and college at the same time.
Yeah, yeah.
So I wanted her to do that. And I also wanted her to, to get, prepare for scholarships. Because that's something that I wasn't able to do. When I got here in the 12th grade,
it was too late
for a lot of those scholarships. Yeah. Normally you start at like 9th, 10th grade. Yeah. So I wanted that experience. However, she loves it. Some people like, you get mine, dude. And I will say to them that I got God. You got to think about all the different scenarios. What if I wasn't here? We have people that don't have parents. How do they live? What about all the Nigerian kids in Nigeria? Nothing's wrong with them.
Yeah,
nothing's.
They go to boarding schools. They go to boarding school.
Come home.
Some even have to climb the bridges, or climb the highways, cross the highways to get to school.
Exactly. I remember when me and my husband first got married, and I worked during the day. No, he worked during the day, and I worked at night, and we only saw each other on Sundays because our work shifts. We're like that. So my point is that we send our kids to school for 8 hours in the day. In America, many people do have to work 2-3 shifts.
Yeah.
So you truly only see your child for that 2 hours. And then in the morning, I feel like the age between 0 and 12 are those years that you pour into them.
Mm-hmm.
Once they hit 13, it's like, okay, now... how do I let you start
raising yourself? Yeah.
Raising yourself and or expressing what I've taught you.
Mm.
So now you're in an independent space where you're now going back. You're pulling from all the things your parents have taught you on how to behave, how to carry yourself, how to do these things. And let me see, even if you make the mistakes now between 13 and 18, you have time to correct it.
Mm.
By the time you're 18, I'm grown. It's hard to change because you're in the mindset that you're an adult. Two, is people are not forgiving on adults when they make mistakes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They'll tell you straight up, you're an adult. You cannot go back to your parents for whatever. And like I was telling you earlier, my husband, he was trying to do everything for them. I said, please. So now she's Nigeria. You can't do it
for her anymore. She has to do it. It's the helper, right? Yeah, I remember you said that. Yeah.
She has to do it herself. Another thing on the education side, when she was here, she was taking 7 classes.
Mm-hmm.
English, math, social studies, and science.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have what's called specials.
Yeah.
So the specials, they rotate it in terms. She got to Nigeria. She's doing 17 core classes. 17 core classes. Which was a shift, obviously, for her. But now, her grades are just going.
And she's cut off.
The first exam she took, she came first in Yoruba. I said, that's a lie. You come first in Yoruba. And then, obviously, it meddled in where she was, 8th, 9th. They do the ranking in Nigeria. They don't do that here. I love the ranking because it didn't make sense how you become 12th grade and someone's valedictorian. How did this person become valedictorian? We didn't know of him this whole time.
Yeah.
But back home, you already
You
know your space. Mm-hmm. So those are those things that I really loved about our Nigerian education that helps propel you. Now she knows where she's at. She knows how to study. Here they don't study until they get to college. They don't study. Mm. They do homework and projects, but they don't study how we study.
Ah, my God. Primary school, you start studying.
And those are those things that we don't do here. Even as parents, we don't have the time or the mental space to
put food on the table.
For our children. Huh. And so I think that they're experts for a reason, right? Yeah. You have doctors. If we are doctors, we will be diagnosing ourselves. So if there are specialist educationists that can assist in getting this done, why not do it?
Mm.
Why not? Is there a fear?
Yeah.
I don't have a fear because I believe that she's in the hands of God.
Mm.
And God is going to protect her like he did to us. I was in Nigeria, like I said, 7 years. Nothing happened to me. Now you have those fears, uncle taught you, somebody gonna talk. And it's for you to say no. When you say no the first time, the confidence is there now.
Yeah.
And I believe her being in that space, maybe to say no, all her friends, no, no, no. I remember my mom, she would say, ah, when you see someone, don't let no one touch your head. So when someone comes, you duck. You all ducked. All of us ducked our heads. So no one touch
you. Yeah, you touch your
that's
glory.
Something that you, that's people in Nigeria.
That's your crown of glory, by the way. So for our non-Africans, like, we don't like people touching hands. Don't want to touch your destiny. That's
yes. Like so you and everyone's doing. That's another thing. There's certain way that I wanted to, the way I was talking to her at that age of 12, that I would go back and she might go back and talk to her friends, and the friends would say, oh, your mom is weird. My mom don't do that. Yeah. But now when she goes to Nigeria, all of them are doing the same thing. Yeah, it doesn't look weird. It's cool. Oh, okay, they're doing it too. Oh, yeah, so my mom did the same thing. No, my mom says the same thing. I wanted her to have that experience, that shared experience, I guess. And understand where her, like, even now that I'm in America now and I look at my mom and how she raised us, I understand it totally. That if I didn't go to Nigeria or live in Nigeria, I probably wouldn't have
been where you are.
Parents at all, yes.
Man, Elizabeth, you sold this idea, man. Like, it's not just the idea, you sold it and given another perspective. And I imagine that there are parents who will benefit greatly from this. So you have, how many kids do you have, by the way? Three?
I have three, yes.
Three kids. Now, I imagine that having your first, there's like a bit of a dynamic shift, you know, in the other siblings. How are they coping with their big sister being gone out of the house? And are you planning to also, you know, send them to Nigeria to, you know, like using your kid, your oldest kid as the starter, you know, as a way?
Yes. The oldest kid was I won't call her guinea pig.
Oh, I mean, we are the guinea pig. I'm the first boss. Guinea pig.
Yes, all of them are going. My son, I told all of them, I said, once you hit 13, you're heading out. I felt like 13 was the right age where they're no longer a child, but they're not adults. However, they know how to speak up for themselves. So my son, he will be going in 2 years. She'll be back. So she'll be back. And then he goes in January.
Yeah.
He'll be 13 in December. So he's going to go. And he's going to go to the same school. Yeah. It's so funny. This particular school allows us to talk to them every week. So
every week,
the parents actually can talk to them. And this past semester, because it's the first year, I was able to actually video call her and actually see her every week. If I chose to. So yeah. I did take advantage of that. So I was able to talk to her. They also have this particular school. Between the semester, they go home for a week and then they come back and then they go home for the 2 weeks. So when we were in school, when we come in September, we get to December.
Yeah, yeah.
So they go home in October for a whole week, and they come back. Same thing in second semester. They went home in, I think, March, and they.
So
came.
She stays with your mom. Why she stays?
She stays with my mom. Yeah, wow. Nice. And it's so funny because this time my mom had to come to the States, so she was with some of my cousins. She was able to meet more of my family. It was awesome. She's meeting people that she would never, if she was here, she would never have met.
Yeah.
So it was, and she's living with them. She's understanding them. Also, I put her in hair school. So she learned how to braid hair. I said, hey.
While she's in school there?
So when she comes home, she goes to the hairdresser down the street. She's learning how to do, my mom bought her like a mannequin. How to do. And my son, when he goes, he's going to learn how to cut hair. Because those are things that I wish
did.
Yeah, you know, learn a trade. Because when you come here, that trade helps in college, helps pays for a lot of things. So, back home is where it's good to get that done. So, yes, my son became the firstborn. Now that his older sister is gone.
Responsible.
So responsible, becoming a young man and helping his younger brother out. So, and they say once in a while, oh, I miss Jessie. And every time that she, when she comes home, they're able to talk to her in length, and they just discussing about their friends. Oh, yeah, Sean said this. And when she's in school, she's showing them all her friends, and Dara, you've become popular already. When you get here, you
it was gonna so preparing your son in a way, yeah. Ah, man, Elizabeth, thanks for sharing. And my question about, you know, Nigeria's education system, it wasn't more of my own comments, but it's just a lot of rhetoric that's, you know, going around about, oh no, the whatever is diluted. So I just threw that as more like a devil's advocate question, but thanks for balancing that out. Like I told you, I was in Nigeria for 3 months. We pulled my daughter from, she was in kindergarten here in the US. We pulled her from there because we're going to bring my son, who was born through surrogacy, back, and we had to stay for a while to prepare the papers and all that. So we put her in a private school. My experience here in the US, so for the first 4 years was in a private, you know, daycare, which was Montessori and very detailed. I mean, if this woman had a school, like a proper K through five, I probably would put my daughter through there. So we put her in a public school. We live in a good neighborhood, so the public school here is quite good. But tell me why the second day of school, I'm getting an email from her teacher saying, oh, your daughter is, you know, she's so active. She's, you know, not sitting down. She's not focusing. And I'm like, how do you email a parent on the second day of school, and these are 5 year olds, and the shame, it was almost like she was calling us out. As I mean, the way I read it was, and I imagine when you're talking about your daughter, you know, and them saying, but you know, she's becoming more social, it felt like this is your wild, uncontrollable child. But I'm like, she's fine. And initially my thought was just to talk to my, what are you doing in school, what are you discussing her name in school? But I had to remind myself, she's fine. And of course, you know, I imagine that the teacher was, but it's like second day of school. So when we took her to Nigeria, and every now and then another email will pop up, I already did this, I already did that. It was just getting too much. And it started giving me a lot of palpitation. Whenever I would see an email from the teacher, what killer today again? What has happened again?
What happened?
So when we sent her to Nigeria, right? And she was in a private school where we were in Gbagada. I remember when I opened my phone one time, it was this call from the school. My heart started going, what has Ari done again? Oh. But they're just calling to ask about food allergies because we paid for like lunch. And every time I'll go pick her, I'll be trying to pick words from the teacher. Okay, tell me how is she doing in school? What's going on? They look at me like, ma'am, calm down. Like, she's okay. I'm like, is she not super active? Like, no, she's not even the most active child, but even if she's active, we get her busy. But man, after we were done for that 3 months, I really wish there was a way I could bring that part of teaching parenting, bringing it back to our system here. Because there's a way our teachers in Nigeria are, this is our child, we'll take care of it. Exactly. If they're involving you as a parent, it has to be something really extreme that it cannot handle. And so when you were talking about how your child is really enjoying herself, I'm like, of course she will, because schooling in Nigeria and schooling here, American teachers, they need to like... Well, not that said, I know some of them, the overwhelmingness, not having enough support in classrooms, and many kids. So I feel for them and I can empathize. But man, the things we parents see. And I'm glad that I'm able to have that dual experience as a Nigerian, knowing that this is not normal. This is not exactly. normal. Exactly. Yeah. So I just wanted to point to that. Now, I am so happy that your daughter is having a good experience. And I imagine that... for parents who might be at that verge of deciding whether they want to take their children, you know, back to Nigeria to help them out, what are some practical steps you had to take as far as honing down the school? Now, you talked about how your mom found out about the, you know, person who owned the school and all that. But what are some things on your checklist to help you ensure that, okay, my child will be safe, I don't have to be worried about, you know, their safety and all that, and also the educational support to be provided? What are some practical steps you're able to recycle for parents who might be listening?
Well, I think for me, it was different, maybe because, you know, the times. However, for my daughter, the school she's in now is not super preppy, whereby she's not learning. Like, I don't want her to struggle. However, I do want her to know how to survive. So they're not, they have, like, for example, during the interview, they asked her, do you know how to wash your own clothes? Now, at the time, obviously, she wasn't washing her own clothes. We have a washing machine. But she was washing her underwear. And they just told her, look, we'll train you. You know how to do that. Then there were other Americans there. Other people from other nationalities at that particular school that did not let her make her feel too left out. Okay. And told me that the teachers were experienced with international students.
Good.
Right? Because sometimes you have teachers that, who are these people? They They don't get it. But because they've worked with international students, it was easy. You know, it was a little bit easier to forgive or have grace on certain mannerisms that our kids here do. For example, it's common for a kid here to see someone and say hi instead of good morning, good afternoon, you know, and that initial hi would be like, oh, okay, oh, you are from there, okay, we'll tell you how we do it here, instead of this person knows it, you know, instead of rebuking immediately, they already have a sense of what to expect. So I would say when choosing a school, you want to look into that. I remember when we dropped her off, I was there for 3 weeks and I wanted to see her before I left. So we just showed up. We said, oh, I came to come and see, I want to see my daughter because I'm leaving. And the gate man would not allow us in. He said, you can only come on visiting day.
What?
Ah, I said, Mr. So-so said I can come. Ah, he's a small boy. No. They didn't let us. They did not allow us in. We had to call the principal before. And they at the gate, you had to sign in. They give you like a tag, badge to wear. And it's a big compound. So the gate was here and the school was some acres in. You know how like a winning
compound. Wow.
So it was large.
Yeah.
So you couldn't just jump the fence and you're at the school. So the security was super tight. We were sitting there for at least 15, 20 minutes
until
the principal. So I already knew that security was tight. The way the security of this school, how tight it is, They do the afternoon and night prep in the hostel. They have like a common area where they study. Mm. So once the student comes out of the hostel to go to class, and then they come back, they're always with a house parent. So when I was in a boarding school, we had house
mistress. Yeah.
Mm. We had a matron. They lived in the staff quarters, which was ways down. Mm-hmm. And our immediate person was the prefect, who was 15, 16, 17 years old. Thinking about it now, and that was our house captain.
As in our savior. They were still babies, Steve.
Can you imagine? Still babies. But this particular school, there are like two or three house adults, parents that live in the hostel with them. Another thing with this particular school, they're separated by class. So in her hostel is 7th, 8th, and 9th graders. And
then
the seniors are in a different hostel.
That's really good, because the hierarchy of bullying and all that. Oh.
Way down. I really love that about this particular school. Now, do they still try and rough you around? That is there, but it's not as crazy as it was when we were probably in school, when our immediate bunkmate was almost 3 or 4 years older than us.
As in,
So, and then this particular school, they had a list of things that we needed to bring, which was, you know, right there. They don't allow money, cash. They have what's called a talk shop. You put it into the school account, and then they just bring the snacks and the kids take it. They don't allow
commissary. You just put the money in there.
Exactly.
Wow.
They don't allow provisions. You can't bring pick milk, all that stuff. They have the food they give them. Yes. So this was like a perfect find.
Wow.
It was a perfect find. And they have different events that they do, student engagement, you know, after school, they have music, you can join clubs and stuff. So I guess what I would say is you want to find a school that is not an exact culture shock. right? Like, oh, now my I don't know nothing, but something that will just seamlessly blend them right in.
That's a great tips, and I love the updates though, because you're talking about you don't bring money, you don't bring provisions. Ah, those are great upgrades. I was asked for when I was in Oyo, but yeah.
Like, no pig milk.
No pig milk. Like, what are you going to do your concoction? No, like, what are they eating? But this is good. And we're going to put your contact information at the very end for parents that might want to reach out to you. Now, real quick before you go, you wear so many hats, you know. Congrats on all of your achievements. You're the dean, founder, education, civic leader. How do you balance it all? And I guess, if you could have like a mission statement for all the things you do, what would that be?
Mission statement. I guess for mission statement, it will be the best you can and leave it for God. So I try to do things intentional. Like, okay, the wearing hats, there's a time for everything. Everybody talk about work-life balance. I just think the time for everything and using the time wisely. And I still attribute that back to boarding school, where we had a time, woke up, and every hour of the day was to something. And I do that too. I have my schedule, and I say, okay, this day is when I work on these hours of the day. I get my dean stuff done. Oh, I have a free moment. Let me work on my civic duty, my leadership. Oh, I'm helping the church make some flyers. Take those hours. I'm not one on social media. I'm not on social media to be. Yeah. I don't browse because I feel it takes a lot of my time. I'm not one on the phone either. So I'm not talking a lot on the phone. I'm texting because I can multitask. I'm texting. So I communicate more on text because I'm doing other things while I can text. But I guess I'll say I dedicate certain times of the day to certain things where I can get those things done. I know when I'm going to be with my children. So I say, okay, Thursday nights, we'll have family nights. Wednesday night, I'm on a board meeting. So I'm going to be in the Zoom. I'll probably be in my car while the kids are running around in the house so that I could be in quiet. So I carve out time. And I tell anybody, you have to put something down for every hour of the day, because if not, something else will steal it. Someone else will take that time from you, and that's time is something that you don't get back.
Exactly.
So, for example, I'll tell my husband, you might want to put that thing at 9 o'clock. Because at 8 o'clock, your child will say, oh, Dad, can you help me with this?
This and that, yeah.
I'll be able to say to him, well, I have an appointment at 9 o'clock, so I can't help you. But if you don't put a time to it, oh, okay, well, I'll still get it done. And then you're helping that person out. Before you know it, it's 1 o'clock. You're too tired. You can't get those things done. So I will say what has helped me balance all these different hats is attaching it to a time in my day, in my week, in my month, in my calendar, in my year. Yes.
Nice. What's something you've unlearned about leadership in the last 5 years?
I have unlearned about leadership is that you are the smallest person in the room. So when I lead, I don't lead from, oh, I know everything. Nope. I'm learning from everybody around me. I'm accepting the assistance from everybody around me. When people come in, they have to, they know who, I guess it will be more of, I don't lord leadership over people. And it'll take a minute before you know, oh, she's actually the person that is in charge here, because I am one of empowerment. I try and make sure that everybody's, you know, working in their strength. So I have learned that, one, you don't want to be the smartest person in the room.
Yeah.
I want to be able to learn from everybody. You listen, you hear. You can't talk down at people. You listen. We're communicating because you never know. They have one or two ideas that can actually propel you to the next step. Humility is like number one. When someone said, "Oh, can you describe yourself?" I really can't describe myself, but I can allow people to describe who I am. And in doing that, I want to behave in a way where they're describing me in the right character, in the right. So I want to carry myself in a way where, I trust her. I can depend on her. Oh, she's giving me the right information. When I don't know something, I'll tell the person, hey, let me find out for you. I'll come back to you with that information. You know, so I've learned overall in leadership not to be the smartest person in the room.
Yeah.
And humility. Humility. Serve others. Yeah. You need to be serving other people. And in a way, hey, they might be loyal back to you.
Right. I love those tips. You know, you're the smallest person in the room, learning from other people, and humility as well. Right. So you're also a precinct delegate in Detroit. What led you into public service and local politics? And how does that work you do align in your mission of empowering the African diaspora?
If we go back to the question about where home is, this is where I live. So I need the policies in my community to benefit me and my people. And the only people that can bring that lens are us. Very popular right now. We have a bunch of Nigerians stepping into leadership. I think the last election in the state of Georgia, there were like 9 Africans as state representatives,
nice.
Senate, House. We have Dr. Ola. He's the senator in D.C. So we have a bunch of Nigerians stepping into those leadership positions. And like I said, because we're no longer the first, second, we're now like in third, fourth generations, we're here, we're not going back to Nigeria to go and lead Nigeria. We're here leading our people here. And I believe that as an African, as a Nigerian, our experiences, our culture, our ways needs to be in the system to shape what that looks like for us. Right now, we have in the state of Michigan is a city called Dearborn, where we have the most populated Arabs
living
here, They've taken over many of the leadership, you know, mayors and city clerks. And guess what? They influence the education system. The education, the way of life, the policies. In that city. And I'm like, okay, when an American looks at a situation, how does that affect an immigrant? You don't know the life of that immigrant to be able to speak for that person. But only we can speak for our own in a way where policies can be shaped to help us. So that is where I said, okay, no. There needs to be a voice. We need to step in and do that, because this is home. This is where we're gonna be. So
That is very rich, and kudos to you, and hopefully and all the very best in that pursuit.
Thank you.
What are some of the misconceptions about Nigerians or even Africa as a whole that you encounter in your leadership roles, and how do you challenge or reframe them?
I guess misconceptions. In leadership could be that we are overachievers. we do the most. However, I don't see it like that. I think we just expect excellence, and we want everyone around us to be excellent. So in that way, we try to empower you to be the best that you can be. It's so funny. Even now, I'll say something like, Wayne County has their own common sense. My own common sense is not the same at all, because what just happened, that was wild. So I think the Nigerian common sense Oh, the African common sense is just a different common sense.
Different brain,
that's one of the other things that I wanted my daughter. My daughter, she's book smart and she's street smart. Yeah. But she's not sharp, sharp.
Niger sharp.
And only in Nigeria can you get that sharp, sharp. And
it's not taught in schools. You have to get it on the streets.
People walk around me and be like, you're just a different, that sharp is in our blood. And or in the water.
In the water, just something, yeah.
It's not
a
street smart thing or book smart thing. It's a sharp.
Yeah.
How you can pivot so quickly. How can you adapt so quickly? How you learn so quickly.
Yeah.
Get up, when authority comes. How you maneuver. That's a different Nigerian.
You read the room. Sharp. We have to call it Nunchi. You read the room quickly. You know how to adjust quickly.
Yes.
You can't be caught anyhow.
those are things that I think we get to benefit as Africans, especially in spaces of leadership. Yes.
Yeah. Okay, great. What are you most proud of professionally or personally that others might not see on your resume or on your Facebook status or WhatsApp status?
I think I'm most proud that I'm setting goals and accomplishing them. Mm. I'm happy that I set a goal to get my doctorate, and I accomplished that. Right, uh-huh. since 6 years old, I was supposed to be Dr. Liz.
Dr. Liz, yeah.
I'm happy that in every space, whether it's faith, family, because it's funny, even in leadership and all politics is found in every space. And in my family, I am one that my family members call and say, okay, Elizabeth, we're doing family reunion. You're the planner to organize everyone in the community. I'm proud that I am someone that people can reach out to for assistance, for help. And even if I don't have the resources, I'm happy and proud that I'm able to call on people that can provide such to those people. Even down to even our FEGO, I didn't graduate technically with our FEGO class. Yeah. However, I'm able to come back, assimilate, be accepted, and do what we need to do to push whatever goals that we've set forward. So I'm proud of that. You know, not every time you are able to toot your own horn.
Yeah.
So as far as me and God know it, we are good.
Yes, I mean, yes. Kudos to all of that, by the way. I almost always don't even remember that you didn't finish with us, but your presence and your leadership and just how you have that knack of bringing everybody together. In the early years of Facebook, I remember you even did a reunion for those in the US, you know.
Yes, we did.
That was so amazing. Before, WhatsApp was a thing, way back in, I think it was 2005 or 2000.
I think, four, five. Yes.
Like, wow,
in Chicago.
How you gathered people together. Yes. Amazing. Now, looking back, what advice would you give your younger self? Perhaps that child who was in Tinubu House on 7. If you could go back in time, what advice would you give your younger self when it comes to maybe navigating identity, career, or even motherhood?
Advice I would give myself is what I know now is know how to say no. I am one that, someone will say, can you do this for me? I'm quick to jump. I'll leave everything I'm doing to jump for that person. And I will say to my, take time for yourself. Know how to say no. The person will understand. When you can help, go ahead and help, but take care of yourself. Self wellness, awareness, I guess I'll say. So that will be one thing at least. Take care of yourself, because
self-care and saying
once you are gone, remember Elizabeth, and then you're eating, people have moved on with their life. So I'll say, take care of yourself.
Yeah. Thanks. And lastly would be, how do you wind down? Like, what does wind down look like for you? Because you're always doing a lot. Not a lot. I take that back. You're very productive, And what does downtime look like for you? And are you able to lean into that rest? Because I struggle with just not doing anything. I feel like it's sinful, even though God is trying to walk through, just rest and don't try and do something. Don't try and fill your background noise with something. Like, just rest and relish in that. It feels so counterculture to me, but I'm curious, how do you practice rest and what does a downtime look like for you?
It's so funny, even though you mentioned background noise. I watch TV. I have some shows that I just like. I picked up on K dramas, and I'll be on those K dramas. And
ooh, my kids, I didn't know you into K dramas.
Yes, yeah, I'll be on the Korean. And I, you know, the funny thing, they have it. They translate in English, but I don't want to hear the English.
No,
I want to hear it in that. Yeah. And I rather read the captions. And I wind down. I'm not doing anything. And I'm a morning person. So like I said, 5 a.m. I'm up. I'm doing everything. By 5 o'clock, I'm like shut down. I can't. Like I'm just too tired to even get up to be moving around. So I just sit and eat dinner. I watch some shows. And my 9 o'clock, my husband's like, okay, time to go up. Time to go upstairs. Go and sleep.
Yeah.
So in the past, I had bad migraines, and I thought that was God's way of shutting it down, because once I had those auras, like I'll just
feeling
shut
it, yeah.
Everything shuts down for like 2 hours. I can't do nothing. And I remember, oh, I didn't eat or I didn't drink water, and or I'm just so stressed. Thank God I'm healed. No more migraines. So like, I said earlier, self-awareness, taking care of myself. So I sleep. 9 o'clock, I try and be in bed. If you're talking to me, I'm dozing, I'm gone. So, but TV is my wind down. I watch shows, nice shows.
That's good to know. I do shows as well. I don't have enough time like I used to, but yeah, those are like my little way of just connecting to the world and also exploring, because I speak Korean a little bit.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I'm actually moving to Korea in August. Yeah, I got a Fulbright. Awesome. I'll be there for a year, you know, doing
nice.
My research.
Congratulations.
Thanks on that. But this has really been nice talking to you, Elizabeth. I feel like we could just keep talking more and more, because there's so much wisdom and depth to you. Of course, I knew that already. but talking to you feels like sitting at the crossroads of culture, of motherhood, of leadership. And thank you for just reminding us of so many things, that identity isn't always linear. It's constantly evolving. And so for those who might be listening, whether you've wrestled with where to raise your kids, how to blend cultures in your marriage, or what it means to honor your roots while chasing your dreams, and just that intergenerational legacy of support and keeping the home front, you know, very stable. So hearing her parents, you know, reason for sending them back home to make sure that everything was good, and even bringing her back, and Elizabeth also helping her daughter and other kids, her many kids as well, to prepare them for the future in such a way that they are able to hone their God-given skills. There were so many things in today's episode for all of us, you know, trying to make sense of life in between. And if you ever wondered whether sending a child back home for school is worth it, I hope you learn from her story today. She's given us the wisdom, the practical tips that comes from, you know, doing it with intention, with love, and a long-term goal. Yes, the dinner table might be one person short, but it's a means to an end, right? Mm-hmm. So we hope you felt seen, and because I know I did. I know that in the future, if I'm thinking about sending Ari or even her brother to Nigeria, it won't be from a place of fear. Yes. It will be, Elizabeth has done it. But perhaps maybe I can even talk to her daughter to find out, oh, you've done it. Can you give us, can Ari talk to you and things like that? Mm-hmm. This is why we do the stories, okay?
Yes,
so lend support to parents. We see you. We know you're doing so much to put food on the table, to live in a country that doesn't feel like home, but you're trying to make it happen. Mm-hmm. Not just for you, but for your kids. But everything you're doing is valid, and we hope that you feel seen, you feel supported. Elizabeth, how can people get to contact you if they have more questions?
They can contact me, e.ajayibridges@gmail.com.
Okay, we'll put that in the show notes. Hey, can I let her know that you got her from the podcast? Dr. Bridges, it was so nice having you. Dr. Ajayi Bridges, sorry. Let me break that representation robot.
Yes.
Dr. Ajayi Bridges, she was so nice. Bridges, it was so nice having you on the podcast. And to our listeners, and until next time, keep building those bridges and showing up for your full self. Elizabeth will bring you back. I don't know in what capacity, but you have to come back. And I will wait to hear from the community members.
Yes.
Usually they send feedback, and which I'll share with you whenever this episode comes up. And maybe we can find a way to bring you back in that capacity. But
awesome.
Have a lovely weekend. And thank you so much for your time. This went longer than usual, but I really enjoyed it. I'm not going to cut anything out. It was so good. It was so, so good.
Thank you.
All right, then. Have a lovely weekend. Thank you.
You too.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.